So we're just gonna play a little game here. I've got 10 images, and we'll show all 10, no matter what. You guys are fairly clever, so I think you're gonna get it. But just when you know what's going on, please shout it out. Let's just look at our first image. Yep. Well done, John. That's a camera. That is a camera. Yep. What's our next image? Sun visor. All right. Yep, that's the sun visor. What's our next one?
Holidays.
You say holidays. Yeah, you're clever. Yeah, so what we got so far? We got a camera, and it's nice and portable, and it's just the right kind, you know. We've got the sun visor so we don't get burned. Now we've got sun cream, and now we know we're going on holiday. But we still have more preparation to do, don't we? What else we got? Sandals. Some people wear sandals. I don't. My feet are too ugly. Do you want to bet? let's see what the next one is. How prepared is this individual? Well, that's true. Italian language course DVD. You can quickly learn conversational Italian. So now we know something a bit more specific. We're going somewhere warm. We're going to Italy. Way. Okay, what's the next one? Sunglasses. Yeah, that's just kind of following the theme, isn't it? Plus I wanted 10 because I like round numbers. What's the next one? Snorkel, scuba. You can really enjoy the water. So now you know you're not going to like Florence. You're going to the coast. You know? So now we're prepared, we're ready for the actual seaside holiday. We've got this. This is another component. Looking forward to that. What's the next one? Well, yeah, you got to be able to, you know, buy stuff and you got to be prepared. So you go and you take your sterling and you change it to euros. What's our next one? Ooh, this one's quite important. So if you go, and this has happened to me, when you arrive somewhere and you don't have somewhere to stay, it's if you really feel super unprepared. So to be prepared, it's good to book your hotel in advance, yeah? And the next one's really big. Hooray! So you book your flights, right? The whole holiday is complete. Then what do you do next? You could miss your flight. Oh, that'd be awful. But let's just assume that you make it to the airport on time. Are we missing anything? Yes, passport. Well, luggage. I like to travel light. So, and my camera. Yeah, this small thing. Iris, I think that's the last one, isn't it, Eck? Yeah, okay. A friend of mine just did this. He went through the entire process of booking a holiday, did everything, booked the hotels, the accommodation, the hire car, the flights, you know, bought stuff to prepare to go, and didn't realize his passport was expired, and he couldn't get it done in time. So I just kind of thought, how silly, such a small, trivial detail, and you rock up to the gate, and you're like, here you go, and they look at the expiry date, and they go, no. Do you know what? The passport is so important that I couldn't even stomach bringing my current passport with me. This is an expired passport. I only keep it just because it's nostalgic. An expired passport has no value whatsoever. It essentially means that the country you're going to has said, you're not invited anymore. You don't have any right to come here, so you can't come. And it's just that small, trivial thing that, in fact, I've been kind of doing this today, as a matter of fact, and this will become relevant, but Ashley and I are going to a wedding at the end of January. Really looking forward to it. And it's traveling with friends as well, which we haven't done ever. And it's in a foreign country, and we've planned everything. The same sort of deal. We've got the camera ready to go. I've not bought sandals, but I've booked the hotel, booked the hire car, booked the flights. Everything's done and ready to go. And rest assured, I'm going to make sure that my passport is not expired, because it's that little thing that can change your great plans into something that's worthless. And actually, it could be a waste. My friend who missed his holiday didn't get much of his funds back because he didn't even buy insurance. So the fact that we're going to a wedding here is kind of pertinent, because we're discussing one today. It's probably okay to go ahead and put the text up. We're looking at the parable of the 10 virgins who go out to meet the bridegroom. And Jesus tells this parable. So parables are not just cute little stories that we share with children. They're powerful. They can be life-changing. They can be life-transforming illustrations of truth. Something that is a short story that really hits home. I hope that maybe for someone, this calls someone to a new life. So I think Jesus told this story, and it can be a bit scary, because what he's saying about not having your passport, not having that one thing that you need to get on the plane, that could determine eternity for us. So let's just start reading the first couple of verses. Matthew 25, verse 1, if you want to follow along in the Bible. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps, but did not take any oil with them. The wise ones, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. So we're going to a wedding ceremony, and the bride isn't even mentioned. Oh, that's weird. Because in this story, it's all about the bridegroom. And when he arrives, that's when the party starts. When he comes, that's when everyone gets to meet him and go into the wedding ceremony. And Jesus says that there's 5 that are foolish and 5 that are wise. So Jesus is the bridegroom in this story. And those who he have invited, so he's invited 10 of them to come along and participate. Not just come and stand there and watch the thing, but hey, you can do something. You can shine your light when the bridegroom arrives. I don't think it's a big detail that it's 50% one way and 50% the other way. 5 who were foolish and 5 who were wise. I just think it's kind of divided down the middle. It could be 2 who were foolish and 8 who were wise. I don't think the number is important. I hope. Because I'm making that statement. Yes, it is recorded. And yet, there was 5 who came and they were fully prepared. And there was 5 who weren't. So, the fact that they were coming to shine light on the situation, that is intentional. You'll have heard the verse, "Thy word is a lamp for my feet, a light unto my path." You'll know that throughout the Bible, light is very, very symbolic. It'll talk about making sure that your candles have wicks. You make sure that your lamps have oil. I mean, even think about it today. Like, if we've got all these sweet lights, but there's a power cut, if there's nothing behind it, they're useless. So the same lamps without oil or candles without a flame, they don't do anything. And this is interesting, because in Exodus 27, God says this. He says, "Command the Israelites to bring you clear oil of pressed olives for the light, so that the lamps may be kept burning. In the tent of meeting, outside that curtain that shields the Ark of the Covenant law, Aaron and his sons are to keep the lamps burning before the Lord from evening till morning. This is to be a lasting ordinance among the Israelites for the generations to come. So there's precedence here. And Jesus's audience would be aware of the lamps that was to be kept burning in the temple. They were to make sure that they obeyed that commandment. So this is not an unusual sort of illustration to them. This story kind of strikes home. The wise ones are the ones who obey, and they prepare and they make sure that those lamps don't go out. It's the foolish ones that for some reason they don't take seriously the call to shed light. And so they're unprepared. Some of you will know, just kind of take a break for a moment. Some of you will know that human vision is funny. Some people have really decent night vision, and some have really, really poor night vision. And some of that has to do with age. But for me, I've always had really bad night vision, so I worry about getting older. Ashley can see things in our bedroom in the middle of the night that I don't even see the outline of. And I will regularly walk into the bedroom or anywhere dark, really, just doing this. You know, your eyes as big as saucers and your hand out, just creeping in. Just to say that's how bad my night vision is, but hers is great. So if you've got great night vision, this won't make any sense to you. Just show me the next image. So that's a photo from the top of Arthur's Seat. And I show it to you just because I'd go up there a couple of times a year. I'm generally physically unfit, so I limit it to a couple of times a year. Otherwise, but I always go to the top, and at least once a year, I try to go up in the dark so that I can get night images like this. And I always go until that last little crest of light is sort of in the image. And then by the time I'm done, and I've packed up all my stuff, it's proper dark. I don't know if you can see too well in these. Like on a digital screen, you can really see how black the crags are and how devoid of light that is. And this is a long exposure too, so it's even brighter than what your eye would actually be seeing. So rest assured that on the top of Arthur's Seat, in the middle of autumn or winter, this time of night, it's proper dark. So I carry a torch. See? Carry my torch. I have forgotten it before. You see that? Yeah. I have forgotten it before, and it reminds me how utterly lost I am without that light, without this torch. You can imagine being on a rocky surface, sometimes wet, and you're trying to see your next step. And if you can't see your next step, it's just, it could be really scary. It's just a simple little image, but it's essential, taking a torch with you. It means enough to me that I go up and get the image, but also that I come back safely. So I'm prepared. I prepare myself, and I've got my phone as well with a little torch on it, but it's best to have two. Best to have two torches than just one. Jesus is drawing attention to the bridesmaids who they weren't unprepared. And some of this is not just symbolism about the temple. It's also about the fact that individuals share light when they follow Jesus. When they follow God and they turn to God, they reflect his glory and his light. So people who don't share any kind of light at all, people who don't do good deeds, you could say, they're not sharing their light. There's quite a lot of symbolism in this. And what's quite sad is that this next bit in verse 6, At midnight, the cry rang out, "Here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out." "No," they replied, "there may not be enough for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves." If I'm at the top of Arthur's Seat and I realize I'm unprepared, it's too late, isn't it? It's too late. My safety is now at risk. If it's cold, that could be a problem. I might end up breaking an ankle on the way down. There's consequences for not being prepared. And so at the end of, at the what it says here in verse 1, at the time of the kingdom of heaven. So this is when we meet God. That's not the time to be ill prepared. And it's a heavy thing. It's a heavy thing that Jesus is saying here, that preparation is important. And not preparation so much in the things that we have to do, which I'll get to in a moment. But it's important to highlight this, that there was a time when people were left without oil in their lamp and unable to shine any light. So in verse 10, the last couple of verses, while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others also came. "Lord, Lord," they said, "open the door for us." But he replied, "Truly, I tell you, I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour." So I said that I was planning for a wedding, or planning to go to a wedding. In fact, I've been to loads of weddings, it seems, over the last couple of years. I think that one of the blessings of being a youth worker is that sometimes your kids grow up and they get married and you're invited to the wedding. Oh, it's great. Now, if I hadn't made any kind of impact on their life, or we hadn't actually been friends, or I was just sort of some guy who, like, was round about their life, you would reckon they wouldn't ask me in, right? They wouldn't invite me to their wedding. It just wouldn't make any sense. I can think of people in my life who were fantastic people. They were great, but I didn't know them. Therefore, I didn't want them invited to my wedding. So, I know this is being recorded. I'm really sorry, Mom. But you know this is true. We wanted quite a small wedding, and we ended up getting sort of, I don't know, asked is maybe the nice word, Mom, to invite loads of people who we didn't know. And we pushed back, and then it became sort of a sensitive topic. And we ended up going, okay, fine, we can invite another sort of 60 people or whatever. And it, for me, it was kind of like, but I want to spend that with my really close friends and my really close family. That's sort of why when you have a wedding party and you have people next to you, you don't want to invite people you don't know to be on stage with you when you say your vows. You ask those who are close to you. And that's one of the really nice things about going to these weddings, is that I'm making preparations. Just like I did this afternoon. This afternoon I did hire a car and a secondary hotel. But it caused me to sit down and think it through. It caused me to take action and to make plans. And I was happy to do that, because someone cared about us enough to go, will you fly all the way to South Africa and come to our wedding? And that's happened recently, where there was another wedding on the Royal Mile. There was one in Ireland last year. And it's fantastic to be invited, to be included in those things. For such a special day, when you see the bridegroom and the bride, you know, make their vows and all that stuff. And they're people you love. It's really, really special. But thinking back to my wedding, it's fine that there were some folks who I didn't know. But they kind of did get in the way. And ideally, it would have been better if it had been just people who I really wanted to be there. And I think that has to do with the response of the bridegroom. He's got everybody in there that he wants and knows. And people who he's like high-fiving as they come in, like, yeah, you're here. I know you. I have a relationship with you. We have memories that go back, and we're getting to do this together, and you know. But those who were unprepared, those who didn't take time to prepare their own lamps when they were invited to do so, that's when the bridegroom says, ah, do you know what? We're full. Do you see what I'm getting at? Where the wedding ceremony is for those who have a relationship with the bridegroom, not strangers. And people who have a relationship with the bridegroom make plans, and they care enough to make preparations. So I'm just going to finish like this. And one of the things that I say to young people quite a lot is that if all they've done is sort of heard the gospel and been moved by it, and they don't make any other changes in their life, that makes me wonder what it is that they've experienced. Do they know Jesus? Do they respond to Jesus? Has anything changed in their life? So what about for you? If you were invited to this wedding banquet, would you walk up to the door? And would the bridegroom, Jesus in this case, would he give you a high five and be like, oh, this is going to be just another one of the amazing times that we've had together? Or is he going to look at you and go, why are you here? We don't really know each other that well. And it's just worth thinking that if Jesus is something to us that we want in our life, that we want his grace, we want his love, let's get to know him. It's encouraging that you're here tonight getting to know him. But this, I'm glad it's being recorded as well, because it could be for someone else. But are we getting to know the bridegroom himself? And I'm just going to ask Susan to come up and finish this with a song.